Orale, bienvenidos and welcome to the Familia FFP podcast. I'm Jorge Martin, I'm your host, and today we have a special invitado de lujo. We're in a New York state of mind, but we're going over the bridge to Jersey. Joining us here, he's actually in Long Island, Jeremy Portnoy. He covers the New York Giants for BigBlueView.com and under the SB Nation umbrella. Jeremy, love it that you're able to join us. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Oh, doing great. We get to talk about the Giants. I mean, one of the really, really high profile teams, one of the teams that has one of the greatest historical significances. And you know what? Actually, that's one of the things. And you all have written about this a little bit. Joe Judge bringing back former players, former greats in the New York Giants. What do you think that has that been able to connect to the current players that, as far as you can see?
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of interviews and everything we're seeing from training camp, I think all the fans and all the players are just like enamored with Joe Judge. It's been so long since we've had a good head coach. So it's been nice to get guys like Eli Manning, Michael Strahan, Justin Tuck all coming in and talking to the players. So I think it's definitely, for better or worse, this is probably the most passionate training camp we've seen in the league. And sometimes that's led to fights and sometimes that's led to good practices.
And I will say, you know what? I've seen it. I mean, I've worked in pro sports. I mean, I've heard stuff that people say, you know, a good fight sometimes unites a team. I don't know. I'm not a fan of it. And I know Joe Judge just ripped them a new one because of the fact that, you know, you fight the other team and don't get hurt in the process if you're fighting each other.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of saw it as a good sign, honestly. I don't think it's going to be like this huge thing that's going to carry into the season. I just think it's a sign that, you know, they care about what they're doing. And, you know, I mean, even Daniel Jones is involved in the fight, which is risky, but whatever. I mean, the whole team's in on it. It's something.
That's amazing. I mean, yeah, who you hope to be your franchise quarterback is at the bottom of the scrum, and it's just like, oh, please, no, don't get that guy hurt. He's wearing a red jersey for a reason. So, let's start with him. We talked about it. It's year two of Joe Judge, year two of Jason Garrett as the offensive coordinator. So hopefully, and you know what, I think one of the underrated things about Garrett is, you know, what the role he played in quarterback development for Tony Romo and Dak Prescott. So he's filling that role with Daniel Jones. I think it was really easy for the fantasy football community as the calendar changed from 2020 to 2021 to say, okay, who's going to be this year's Josh Allen? And I think a lot of people were pointing at Daniel Jones, and I know you play fantasy football too. So I think there is that hope. I think it's also, but I mean, the Josh Allen leap was something that just hasn't happened very often. How do you see, you know, Daniel Jones progressing after a year where really he took a step backward?
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like the media is kind of trying to spin it as either he's going to be the next Josh Allen or he's just going to flop completely. And everyone's ignoring the more likely outcome that he's probably just going to be fine. Maybe, you know, someone like Baker Mayfield got there in his third year towards league average. I think that's what we're going to see from him. He's not going to suddenly be this amazing Patrick Mahomes flinging deep passes all over the place. But, I mean, he's shown flashes that he can manage a game and he can be something like Eli was, where if they put a good defense and good weapons around him, they can win.
And how about the running with him? I mean, that's one of the underrated parts. I mean, I know a lot of people make a big deal out of that long run last year where he tackled himself at the 5-yard line. But I mean, still, this is one of the faster quarterbacks out there. I mean, he's not going to run on a Lamar Jackson or a Kyler Murray level, but how much could that running kind of elevate his fantasy value this year?
Honestly, I'm not expecting too much. I mean, last year, he didn't have that many rushing yards. It was mainly like short first down things they were trying to use him for. And now they have Saquon Barkley back. So that's going to, I think, reduce his carries a lot, because last year they were just trying to find weapons wherever they could. I mean, their best playmaker was Darius Slayton, who was not fantasy relevant at all. So now they have Barkley back and they signed Kenny Galladay, I think they're not going to be as desperate to try and create plays with these players who aren't really meant for them.
And what about where is he? I mean, a lot of people made a big deal. I think it was yesterday, the last couple of days on Twitter, there was the interception he threw in one of the drills that kind of went viral a little bit. turnovers are a big deal with him. What have you seen, or what have you gathered that is being worked to kind of, you know, bring that back? Because that was also a big thing that helped elevate Josh Allen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to go away. It's basically what we've seen in training camp is his completions are really good completions, and he can make some amazing throws. But when he messes up, he screws up really bad, and it goes viral, like how you were saying. But I don't necessarily think it's all it's blown up to be. I think it's just that when he does screw up, it is that bad and people take notice. But I don't think it's going to be suddenly so many interceptions. Last year, he did reduce his fumbles and interceptions a lot from his rookie year. So if he continues to progress, I would say it'll be something like slightly below average. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue.
And how about I think StatCast had one of the, or I'm sorry, Next Gen Stats. I'm sorry, I was in the baseball mode there for a second. Next Gen Stats had him as one of the top quarterbacks for 20 plus yard throws last year. How much is that a good sign for, you know, with, and we'll get into the receivers in a second, but how much is that a good sign with someone like a Kenny Golladay coming in?
Yeah, I'm really excited for that. NFL.com had him ranked number one, better than like Patrick Mahomes. Aaron Rodgers is the best deep passer in the league. And now you have Kenny Golladay coming in, who something like over the past 3 years, he ranks like second in contested catches. So you're putting the two of them together. I think you can expect a lot of 30, 40 yard passes from them almost on a weekly basis. That's going to be a big deal. You have someone like Kadarius Toney they drafted, who's known as a big playmaker. Darius Slayton, last year they were asking him to be the number one receiver, but really he's the guy you're using when you need a deep play. So there's going to be a lot of action on that offense.
Well, you know what? Let's get into the receivers while we're at it. Since you're already touching on them, Kenny Golladay, I mean, just a baller coming off of a hurt season. Right now, he's battling a hamstring issue, which I think everybody's I think all of the medical experts are expecting that he is supposed to be, you know, ready to go by opening day. How do you see the targets kind of shaping up both in number and in type for, you know, each of the guys you've talked about, and Sterling Shepard also be in the mix?
I mean, Golladay is definitely going to be the number one, but there's a lot of mouths to feed on that offense. So I don't think he's going to be getting the volume of someone like, you know, Calvin Ridley or Justin Jefferson, these other guys that we talk about in fantasy. So Shepard, he's looked good in camp, but he's already been there for a long time and he hasn't shown too much. I think his targets are going to go down, but they're still going to try and feed Tony. They're going to try and feed Evan Engram. So Golladay, I think since he's such a deep threat, it makes him good for fantasy, but I don't think he's going to have a target share that can maybe sustain him week to week and have a high floor.
And you also mentioned Darius Slayton. You know, he's flashed sometimes. Is he kind of like that boom bust guy that has these, you know, he has these blow up weeks with a long touchdown? Are we looking at more of the same with him this year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, last year they had no one at receiver, so he ended up leading the team in receiving yards and targets and all of that. But now that they have a more balanced offense, I think we can only expect maybe like 3 or 4 targets a game for him, if that. But those targets are going to be on those long go routes. That's what he's good at. He's one of the fastest receivers in the league. He can beat the guy in man coverage almost every time. So he's going to be open on those long 20, 30 yard routes.
Yeah, I remember his rookie year. I picked him up about midway through the season, and he had a couple of big games at the end. But he also had a couple of games where it just disappeared. So that didn't help me in the playoffs. But it's all good. So after Golladay, how do you kind of see the pecking order as far as targets are concerned?
I think it's going to be Evan Engram. Giants fans don't like him very much, but he's had a good camp. If he can reduce the drops, which were a big issue last year, I think he's going to be the number two. Every year they talk about, oh, he has so much potential and he's going to be so great. And this is his contract year, so I think they're really going to target him a lot and see if this is the guy they want to keep around long term. Then number three is probably going to be Shepard, Slayton, about the same. And then as the 3 and 4, and then 5, I would say Kadarius Toney.
And do you see him kind of getting some? They talked about how, you know, maybe getting some jet sweeps or getting the ball in his hands ways other than just the traditional passing game.
Yeah, I think that's what it's going to be. I'm not expecting a huge rookie year out of him, just given how many weapons they have there. But he hasn't really practiced much yet, so we haven't gotten a good look at him. but just in terms of interviews, that's what they've been saying, that they're going to try him on those jet sweeps, things like that. And I mean, this offense is always injury prone. So there's going to be weeks where the receivers are out and he's going to be the number one guy. So for those weeks, I think he's going to be a good fantasy option. But overall, I'm not expecting too much.
And, you know, you were talking about Evan Engram. Is one of the one of the things that I read about from a medical expert is that second year after the Lisfranc surgery is where true recovery is, and you know, a player can really be expected to be, you know, return to past performance. Is that, you know, because last year he's coming off of such a difficult injury to return from. I mean, the feet for a receiver and a tight end, especially a tight end, a bigger guy, is so important. How much do you think people are maybe sleeping on Evan Engram because of his return?
Honestly, I don't think in terms of that it's going to be much different from last year, because he was playing well last year. He's still a great route runner. It's just his hands have been an issue. He's dropping too many balls, and Daniel Jones wasn't trusting him towards the end of the season. His targets went way down. So they're going to need to build up that rapport again. And if he can make some plays in the beginning of the season, I think he could turn into a top 7-8 option at tight end, I would say, would be his ceiling.
Awesome. Well, I think we've hit the receivers. Let's go to the marquee guy, probably the fulcrum of this office, Saquon Barkley. I mean, one of the most talented runners in the NFL, probably one of the most talented runners to come into the NFL in the last 15 years, at least maybe 20. Coming off of the injury with the torn ACL. So much is being made of what his workload is going to be at the beginning of this season. I think part of that comes into play because he's in New York and there's an extra spotlight on him. You know, I've got a medical expert that I trust very, very closely who has said he's going to be fine by opening day. Where do you see him this year by opening day workload and kind of projecting him for the season?
Yeah, and I would be shocked if he's not on the field opening day. I think he's already back at practice. He's definitely going to be there, but they are going to be careful with him, because you got to remember, it wasn't just the ACL tear. Even the year before that, he was injured for a long time, and this is the guy they want around for a long time, hopefully. So I think they signed Devontae Booker. They re-signed Alfred Morris, who they actually got decent production out of last year. So I don't think he's going to have anywhere near the volume that he had in his rookie year. Maybe in the passing game, he'll still get those same amount of targets. And I think he set the rookie record for receptions. So I think they'll still be using him there, but I'm not expecting a ton of carries. I think probably 1,000 yards is what I would guess for him.
Do you think he's going to get close to 250 carries, which a lot of people look at as kind of the magic number, or are you kind of below that?
Yeah, I would say below that. I think they're going to be careful with him, especially, I mean, it all depends on their plans for his contract. If they're going to let him go after this year, then they probably won't care and they'll just use him out. But based on what they've been saying, I think they want to keep him around for a long time. And this doesn't seem like it's going to be their Super Bowl year. I think they're going to be saving him.
And this, you know, and so much comes into play with, you know, when it comes to the running back. I mean, for me, part of the reason that I was looking at, I'm not fading him because of the injury. What I'm looking at is kind of like the whole team. I'm worried about Daniel Jones not taking the next step, and then people focusing on him. And it's an offensive line that Pro Football Focus ranked 32 going into the season. Those are the things. Those are the factors that have me a little worried about him. Not the injury so much. Am I right in kind of having a little trepidation?
I mean, if you're worried about the O-line, they're definitely not a good O-line, but they haven't been good for a long time. And he was incredible in his rookie year behind a pretty similar line. They were better than they are now, but not significantly better. And he's still at 2,000 yards from scrimmage. So I think he's just that kind of transcendent player that if they do end up using him that much, that it's not going to matter with the O-line. He's going to find holes and he's going to make plays.
That, you know, you actually made me feel a little bit better about him. I mean, because of the fact that, I'm a little worried about the injury, but I'm going to look at value. And if he falls, I mean, he's been, I mean, you play fantasy. They're in some early best ball drafts. He's falling into the second round. I mean, is that just ridiculous?
That's a little crazy to me. I don't know. I mean, I always take wide receiver in the first round, but I would probably put him somewhere around like running back 5, 6. So it just depends if you feel strong about those wide receivers going early.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. This was a top three talent last year. A lot of boards, he was not often number two, and he's still young, 24 years old. So definitely one of the up and coming stars. But what you pointed out about them being against kind of running behind a similar line in his rookie year has me kind of thinking about things a little bit with him. Let's talk about that line. I mean, we talked about it. It's number 32. I mean, Andrew Thomas was the first round pick last year. Of the first round picks in 2020, he was the one who didn't, you know, kind of take off and become a potential foundational player. What is this? Is this line still a work in progress?
Yeah. Andrew Thomas, I'm optimistic about him. I mean, he wasn't just bad last year. He was dreadful. And I feel like where he was drafted and what the scouts were saying about him coming in, I mean, he was considered to be the safest prospect in the draft pretty much on the offensive line. I feel like there's no way that he's really this bad. He had a brutal start to his rookie year, too. He faced like Khalil Mack, Myles Garrett, and TJ Watt, like all in the first 3 to 4 weeks. So I think once he's settled in a camp, it's not like COVID crazy camp. He can actually get a normal experience there. I think he's going to be good this year. But I mean, the offensive line is pretty much all rookies and second year players. It's not going to be that great. I'm hoping they can maybe improve rank somewhere around 20th, 25th, but they're not going to be great.
Youth on their side, maybe they keep healthy. I mean, a lot of times the offensive lines that are poorly ranked by the end of the season are the ones that are decimated by injuries. So maybe youth and health will help them out that way. Let's go to the other side of the ball. One last football question. You've got a defense that really took a major step forward with a stud DB and James Bradbury. Leonard Williams was great on the defensive line. Where do you see the strengths and potential weaknesses in the versus the run in the pass game?
It's all strength. I'm so excited about this defense. I think their secondary is going to be top five in the league. James Bradbury he's an incredible corner, but they couldn't really use him in man coverage much last year because they had no one else around him. But now they got guys like Adoree Jackson they just signed, Rodarius Williams, they've been saying really good things about him from camp. So I think they're really going to be able to shut down opposing receivers. I think Bradbury, we saw last year when they played the Seahawks, he was able to completely shut down DK Metcalf. Now that they have more reliable options around him, I think they're going to use him more like that. He's going to be trailing the other team's number one receiver.
So he's going to be traveling with the other team's number one. So that to me is a big thing to think about. Whenever I've got, you know, the Giants are going up against a CeeDee Lamb or an Amari Cooper or Terry McLaurin, those kind of guys, that's going to really make me think twice about playing. I mean, maybe not in a season long league, but maybe that's a deciding factor in daily fantasy, something like that. How about the D-line? Is this going to be a team that's, I mean, a unit that's good against in pass rush?
Not in pass rush. I'm not expecting much, honestly. I mean, they have no edge rushers pretty much. They drafted Azeez Ojulari in the second round, who hopefully will generate some pressure, but he's still a rookie. He's probably the most polished out of all the rookie edge rushers this year. But I usually don't expect a ton out of rookie pass rushers. And besides that, I mean, last year they had something like 7 or 8 sacks in total from the edge. They just don't have much going on there. It's mainly going to be on the inside where they have Leonard Williams had 10 sacks last year. So he's going to be doing something like that. But they just don't have enough pressure along the edge. I don't like their pass rush too much.
Awesome. Well, let's talk a little fantasy. You gave me a little nugget that I want to ask you about. You always go receiver. Are you in the first round? Is there any point in the first round that you're gonna say, oh, I gotta take a running back first?
I said running back actually is what I always do first because I feel like receiver is just so deep, especially this year. I feel like I pretty much always go running back early. If I don't, I just feel like my team isn't the same.
Yeah, that Yeah, there have been times where I take you know a Travis Kelce or actually some of the best teams I've had I've took receiver early, but I got lucky with the running back. I got lucky with a running back in the second or third or fourth round. Where do you kind of stand on when to take a quarterback?
I usually wait on a quarterback. I don't like using a high pick on a quarterback because there's so many good options there. You know, you don't want to miss out on one of those guys that's going to have a breakout season in the fifth or sixth round. And, you know, you can wait and take someone like Joe Burrow, Ryan Tannehill, who I'm fine with. Obviously, I'd love to have Patrick Mahomes, but it's not as big a gap as between the top running back and the 10th best running back.
No, it's how about, you know, one of the big things to do this year is, you know, we've talked about zero running back. A lot of people are talking about the hero running back where you take one running back and then you just hammer receiver and tight end and then maybe pick up a running back in like the, you know, sixth or seventh round. And maybe they even grab their quarterback in that point. What do you think about that strategy?
I still really like taking running backs early. I mean, I just did a draft the other day. I started with Alvin Kamara and Antonio Gibson. And then it was a 10-team league, and then I was still able to get A.J. Brown as my number one receiver. So, I mean, I'd wait for that because there's so many good receivers this year. A.J. Brown's a great player, and he was like the eighth receiver drafted.
Oh, geez. He may end up having a very similar year to like an Antonio Gibson, who I think is going to take a big jump this year. Oh, what a jump. What a jump. Any other fantasy philosophies that you have?
I don't know. I like drafting rookies just because no one knows what to expect from them. Maybe it's just because it's more entertaining, but I feel like that's where you find those breakout guys. So in the later rounds, I'm pretty much all taking rookies, second-year players, instead of someone that might have a higher floor. I like to take those flyers.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of taking rookie running backs and second year receivers, especially the ones that didn't really break out the previous year, but maybe they had, you know, they were picked high in the draft. Henry Ruggs is a guy that I'm kind of like snagging late in drafts here and there just in case, because nunca se sabe, you never know. You never know. Before we get to our last fun question, you know, we were talking about being in the Scott Fish Bowl, and I mentioned that I'm in the U2 division, and you mentioned that's your favorite band. What tour was it that you saw them at Madison Square Garden?
I saw them for Songs of Innocence. That's when I got into them. I mean, it's like I'm younger than a lot of fans, so it's weird. That was the first U2 album I heard. So that's the album that got me into them. And then, yeah, my dad took me to see them at the Garden. It was incredible. They just put on such a great show.
No, it's that was an incredible tour. And the interesting part about that tour was the fact that they were they didn't play anything from the Joshua Tree, their iconic album, because of the fact that the previous year they'd done the Joshua Tree 30-year anniversary tour. So where they played that album, so they just ignored the Joshua Tree, which that was the first time that I'd ever, and I've seen them on every tour since the original Joshua Tree tour. That was the first time that they completely ignored that album. So can you give me like your top 3 to 5 favorite songs?
All right. All I Want Is You is number one. That's one of my favorite songs of all time. City of Blinding Lights, Ultraviolet, Bad. Yeah, it's probably the top 4.
Oh, when you got about 5 minutes, go to YouTube, look up Ultraviolet, Rose Bowl, and you'll see one of the more incredible live performances of Ultraviolet. Bono just absolutely just, I was at that show. It was about 10 years ago and it was just incredible, incredible performance. Not a song that they play very often and just, but they just brought the house down. It was phenomenal. Well, I'm going to close out. I always close out these interviews with a fun question about Mexican food. You know, I always say tacos are like pizza. Everybody, you know, it's hard to have a bad taco. And even when it's bad, it's still pretty good. You're in the land of pizza, but you're in one of the greatest eating cities in the world. Do you have favorite Mexican food, favorite tacos?
I usually just stay traditional. I like steak tacos, you know, get some guacamole in there, some cheese. That's the best. There's a lot of restaurants opening up now with all these fancy creations and like fusion things, but I usually like to just keep it simple. I think that's the best.
Oh, yeah. A little carne asada is still, I mean, it's the 101. A lot of people love carnitas, which is also another one of my favorites. But carne asada, if it's made perfectly right, it's just all day. Could have it all day. Oh, man. Oh, mi amigo, this was a great joy. I really appreciate it. I always love talking to people in New York because it's one of my favorite cities in the world. I'm always a big fan, and I'm hoping to get out there. One of my goal dreams is to actually see Billy Joel in Madison Square Garden. So fingers crossed one of these days. Tell us where people can find your work.
So I'm working with SB Nation, like you mentioned, and at Big Blue View. And I also work with another blog called Baseline Times. I write a lot over there about not just the Giants. I cover the whole NFL over there.
Oh, man. Well, everybody. Oh, and where can they follow you on Twitter?
Oh, yeah. It's just my name, at Jeremy Portnoy.
Muy fácil. Really easy. Familia, this was great. Otra vez, Jeremy, thank you so much. Muchas gracias. Thank you for doing this. Everybody, eso es todo for our show. Special thanks to Anchor for being our hosting network and making sure our independent podcast gets out of the Familia community. Also, special thanks to YouTube for putting our faces out there. So Jeremy's a bit better looking than me. So, you know, keep an eye on his side of the screen, not mine. Please make sure you hit the subscribe, give us a like. Also, you can find us at Apple, Google, Spotify when it comes to wherever you get your audio podcasts. You can find original content at familiaffb.com. You can find me at Jorge Martin 17, as well as at familiaffb on Twitter and Instagram. So, otra vez, everybody. Thank you, everybody. Jeremy, otra vez, muchas gracias. And everybody, have a great weekend. Todos somos familia. Salud.